Welcome to episode 169 of the Better With Running podcast. My name is Chris Armstrong. I'm a Run to PB coach. And look, I'm super excited tonight to introduce fellow Run to PB coach. And look, just, you know, should be the host of the show. But Zach Newman, he's here. Mate, we've got something big tonight. How are you going?
I'm going well, mate. I am pumped. It is big. It's our biggest guest we've had.
And, comfortably.
What's that?
Comfortably.
Comfortably.
Yeah.
Super excited about that. There's a bit of running going on both our ends. We've finally caught up. We've had a couple of big weeks with guests, and this is another one, but we're actually going to have a little quick update on our running. Yeah, mate. How are you tracking?
Yeah, not too bad. Big day. I ran and went to work in the same day, which is unheard of. In running circles, sort of having full-time employment and running, but here we are. No, it's things
going pretty well. Looking, mate? You're managing to water the plants,
mate. This time of year, it's hard work. You know, a bit of extra sun, bit of extra heat. Watering the plants is nearly a full-time job in itself. Yeah. So much respect goes out to all those fellow plant waterers and runners.
No, you take care of your garden, mate. It's it is your pride and joy. So yeah, it's. Mate, we're getting into the heat's coming, and we're going to bring it later with our guests, but no session for you this week. I was looking at the K's, but yeah, as we get onto your week, no, just logging the K's, mate.
Yeah, no, just the easy K's. So I had a myo treatment on cup day, which badly needed. Our legs were, I wouldn't say niggly, but they were very tight. So we're able to get a few tight spots out and probably hadn't been sleeping as much as I would have liked over the last probably week to 10 days. And I think with the consistent week on week over the last 6 or 7 weeks, that fatigue was just starting to cross over into that sort of too much territory. Put that rest day in there on the Wednesday in the hope that that would freshen the body up enough, and did an easy run Thursday as well, just to give the body an extra 24 hours to settle off the back of that treatment. But heading into Friday, I just wasn't feeling it, and I probably wasn't really looking that forward to the session itself. Like, it was quite hard on paper, and normally that's something I get really excited about, so that was a bit of a telltale. I just remember Thursday night just being exhausted and really, I guess, wondering if it was the right thing, that, you know, was it just because I hadn't been sleeping enough, or was the body genuinely giving me a few warning signs that, hey, we're getting pretty close to being burnt out? So, you know, I didn't want to trouble Andy because it was probably about 8:30 on Thursday night this stage. But we just finished Pilates and was having a chat with Anna, and she said, look, you know, if the shoe was on the other foot and one of your athletes had come to you with these same circumstances, what would you tell them? And because I guess I was in two minds, and it forced me to really think about it, and I go, well, yeah, I know exactly what I'd say to them, and I'd be like, yeah, like go and do an easy run, or, you know, have a day off. It's fine. You're not going to lose any fitness. So, and also knowing that Saturday was going to be long run day, so a 2 hour long run, and it was going to be 20 degrees from the start. So knowing that that was going to be fairly physically taxing as well. So had a good chat and decided to do the easy run on the Friday. And I think as soon as I'd made my mind up, I felt so much better. And that in itself just told me it was the right call. So very grateful just to, I guess, you know, have that conversation, you know, with Anna and talk a bit of sense into myself. But had a pretty good long run, sort of body was starting to feel good, and I think each day since then I've just progressively felt a little bit better, and I was able to get back into a session today. So look, still 85 k's last week, was able to get into some deeks quarters today, so that's sort of 8x400 with a 200 float, and that went pretty well. I wouldn't say, look, I'm not feeling 100%, but mind you, I wouldn't expect to feel that way either. And you're never going to absolutely nail a session at 6 a.m. you know, midweek. So,
Did you jump on the track?
Look, I would like to, but given the 8 foot high prison fence that's around it and that I don't have a key, it does make it very difficult.
They've got a moat with the alligators around that track, have they?
Yeah, and there's also some drones that shoot lasers as well, unfortunately. So, local council resources being put to exceptional use at the moment. I mean, I could go and pay $100 for a key, and go and use it when I feel like, but that would, it feels like I'd be caving into their demands. And one of my good running traits is my stubbornness, but it's my detriment in my real life. So, so unfortunately didn't make the trek, but look, if you can escape from Alcatraz, I believe that I can get on the track with the key. So leave it with me. Gonna work on that, but yeah,
So
no.
you're on the loop doing, are you doing continuous loop or are you going back? Do you measure out 6, 8, 800 or how do you?
Nah, it's a 5K or 5.2K loop. So I knew Deeks Quarters fits in pretty well to that. So yeah, just went and did it. And I think the first couple of reps, I was actually looking at my watch, trying to hit a pace. And I think I just felt myself getting a bit anxious. And like, well, you're not on a track, so it's not going to be
Yeah,
too
it's
repeated.
really
Like,
hard.
there's just no point obsessing over that. So just go and run it. And I think probably more so the focus for me today, the way that Andy likes to run Deeks Quarters is, so if you're going to run 80 seconds for 400, he wants the float to be, so the 200 float to be half of that plus 6 seconds. So half of 80 is 40, add 6, that's 46. So so the floats are pretty honest. So for me, I was trying to run sort of 121, 122, so around sort of 323 pace, and then the floats would have been in 46, 47, which is around sort of 353. Okay. And I think probably when I've done this previously, I've tried to smack the 400s quite hard, but then I'm maybe not doing the floats hard enough. I'm probably going around sort of 410 to 420. That was a different experience today. And those floats went very quickly and there was no recovery in it at all. I programmed it into my watch and I think the final 200 meter float, I didn't hear my watch beep. So I ended up running the full 5Ks and it went around in 18 minutes. And I was pretty tired by the end of that. So I think I
It
would
builds
have.
on you that session, and then I
Oh, it
reckon,
does.
you get the first few, but then once you hit that rep 5 to 6, it starts to go, okay, I'm actually working here, and yeah, the last two you can, well, I reckon the last two you get for free, but it's getting to that 4 to 6 is where I guess it's go time to run.
I got through five and went, I've got three more of these. You're kidding. This would be plenty. But I was happy to get through it. I would have, it's hard for me to objectively look at it because I think if I was looking at it from a consistency standpoint from one of my athletes, I'd be really stoked with how they went. But having sort of put myself in it, whilst it was consistent, I think my 400s were between 80 and 83 seconds and all my floats were between 46 and 48. So there wasn't a lot of variation, but just knowing how it felt, I would have liked those 400s to feel a little bit easier, given that, like, for the time that I want to run. So it sort of says to me a mix of I'm not fully over the fatigue that I've got, but also that. Yeah, I've still got a bit of work to do to get to full fitness.
So, mate, I've lost you there a little bit. I think it's come through, but you ended off the week though.
Yeah, no, still in one piece and very much looking forward to Bendigo next week now. So, no, all things, I might even put the spikes on next week. So, we'll see. Watch this
For
space.
the session before that, or straight in?
Nah, for the 3K, so we'll just throw them straight on and see how we go. What
Do
about yourself, mate?
you have a time goal at all, or you'll just go however?
Oh, I'll run to effort, but I'd be really excited if I broke 10 minutes. So,
I think it's
but
nice to have sort of something there to, because they'll, will they pace it? Will they have pace to 10, or but it'll just be
nah.
a free for all?
Nah, I reckon it'll be a free for all. So, yeah, like I'd love to break 10, and I don't sort of have too much that suggests that I will.
Well, and the first
But yeah.
track ones are hard, like tracks. You talk about your first 10K, you know, first road race years, but track's another level, you know. I'll get to Kiwi Steve, who had his first track race of the year. He said it was like, I mean, he had a rough day, but he was in the same boat. He sort of didn't know where he was at till he got on the track and actually had a rust buster. And it was like, you find out on the track, and it's a lot more exposed on the track, you know, once you fall off and you're doing lap by lap, it's pretty tough. But no, it'll be good, mate. I think they got the red carpet's getting laid out for Brady. He's heading over for that 3K.
Is he? Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Maybe. That's how.
Could be some paparazzi there. And
Brady and
yeah.
Ian in the same place in Bendigo. It could be mayhem.
No, it'll be cool. It'll be cool. And a few guys coming, I guess, off the mountain for
Yes.
down for a hit out. So I'll be looking forward to seeing that one, mate.
No, it might be a few photos on the Insta from the Bendigo bats. So. I don't think there's a live stream for this one, but yeah, I'm sure that the boys will get a few photos out and there'll be some results kicking around.
Good stuff.
What about yourself, mate? How did your week go?
It's starting to cobble together some weeks now. Obviously, just had a bit of a flat period where I guess the body wasn't playing ball, but I was probably a bit from my side of just some other priorities coming into play, a bit of workload and late nights and some longer hours. It kind of took priority. And now I've been able to, last week was 66K, and that's off, 6 days. And I guess, stripped it back a little bit just previously to that, so I didn't really need to ramp it right back up. But it's more getting back towards, this week back to the hours. Got 70 minutes done on Sunday at a good pace. Actually, had a session, with Kiwi Steve, who'd run the 3K on the Thursday. Was just in a just sort of just jogging around. So he said he'll jump in and pace me through a 10-6-4 session. So 10 minutes. I sort of tried to go at, I aim was to run it like, you know, high 350s or fours, and we ended up running like 348s for the first 10, and then the sixes was just to go a little bit, just sort of going through the gears, push it a little bit. Obviously, fitness wise, it's just this longer thresholdy type work is just getting some time in the legs, and just I need to get, you know, one of these a week is just, it's a starting point, but you really need two, and a long run, like a long run over 70 minutes is ideal. I need to be two sessions at 90 minutes to really get to that next level. But it takes time. You've got to go through the process, got to go through the steps, and you can't jump any hurdles. So happy to just do my time. And the 6 minutes was as good. Like, I was actually a bit steady. I think having someone there, we did it at Princess Park, so it's pretty flat, pretty easy. Got a 340K in there at some point, just looking at Strava. And then the last 4 minutes sort of probably just didn't have much left, but it's a longer session for me. You know, I've sort of been sitting at the 18 minute mark, starting to get a bit further into the 20s now. So, and then the really big positive sign was to pull up the next day. And I probably was knew that I was catching up with Steve and a couple other guys, Maxi, and Reese was coming. He was doing a long run. He was doing 40K. He already had 180K in the, on the weekly mileage clock. So he's thought he'd just roll another 40, and he was going to go at cruisy pace, and his cruisy pace is now a solid run for me. And I thought, well, this is a good opportunity off one workout. It's almost, as coaches, we don't like to be in that gray area, but I think given where I'm at, I was able to get on the pace, and it actually felt not much dissimilar. The back end it felt, I could feel it a little bit low, but it's sort of, we've been hitting 430, like high 430s, 440s, and then on a weekend to run 420s is probably, it's a little bit tougher for me, but it brings me on. I know that I look back over the last few years and I've sort of had these base phases. I've actually pushed the long runs a little bit because you're just a bit fresher off that one workout. So it was good to get through that one and pulled up well. Seeing Dane next week, we've got a couple of, like, there's a mobility program doing at the moment. I think it's starting to really come through because the last, I don't know, like, things sort of turned the corner over the weekend and early this week. What are we, Wednesday? So last few runs have come out good. I'm noticing the starts are better. Walking upstairs is a little bit better. There's a bit more mobility. So that's positive. And then we're going to just take it to another level with Dane. Also doing like a couple of sessions in the spin bike. So trying to just top up the aerobic fitness in the mornings. So get on there and do 40 minutes and, sweat it out. And so look, I kind of feel like if I can keep this momentum up, start to get that long run back to the 9 minutes, start to add in that second session towards the end of November, then we'll be in a good spot.
Oh, mate, I think just the fact that you're moving pain-free, or as good as the, you can get around upstairs, you're pulling up well the next day, and that you're actually genuinely looking forward to getting out there, as opposed to, I've just got to get through the first 10 or 15 minutes and then it should feel a bit easier. Because there's a big difference between
Oh,
those
big
two
difference,
things,
yeah.
and I can just hear it in your voice. Like you're in a good spot again. So no, I love this.
Yeah, and it was a drag when I was sort of getting 40 minutes done, and I was like, half of that wasn't that fun, and I was just like, I'd tick it off. But a bit of it's from my side is just to push a little bit, and we sort of spoke. And being a day, it's like, well, I'm not getting much sore doing an extra 10 minutes, so it's just going to have to trial it and do a little bit more and see if it actually helps bring it on. So at this stage it is, because the last, I'm starting to feel like, and it's that catch 22. It's like, if I can actually get through this initial adding a little bit more, might be sore at the start, but getting a lot more strength in the legs, I'm actually going to feel better overall. Because you're sitting at 50, 60K a week, don't really go anywhere.
Yeah.
For where I want to go, and based on the amount of running I want to have in the legs.
Nah.
So yeah, it's let's see what the plan is, over the next 3 to 4 weeks, and then take it from there.
I like the sounds of that, mate. And you've kept up the strengths work really well as well, too. So I'm sure you'll be in Dane's good books for that one.
Hey mate, before our special guest arrives, quick one that came across our desk. It's completely off the topic from the running updates, but we thought we'd share it around your mate Carl, your athlete, who had an interesting weekend in when we talk about marathon preps in the morning of. He had an interesting one.
Oh, mate, so Carl lands phone. Carl's from New Zealand and recently ran a 309 at the Auckland Marathon, which beat his previous PB by around 5 minutes, which he set back in 2009 when he was much younger. But Carl sent me a bit of a recap email. It was really lovely, and we talk about sometimes the morning of the race. Maybe it's the warm up; it doesn't quite go to plan. Sometimes we might leave something behind. But Carl had a bit of an adventure. So this is straight from Carl's email. So he describes his race morning. My wife and kids came to Auckland to watch me, and we booked two adjoining rooms. I was supposed to be one bedroom suites, which I thought would be a great idea and could get ready in the living area and not disturb anyone. When we got there was no door between the bedroom and the living area, which was annoying. But I figured I'd just get ready in the bathroom so there'd be no drama. When I plugged the toaster in, the whole room went black. So obviously the bathroom was only for shavers and electric toothbrushes. I found the fuse
Right.
box and I got the power back up, got the toaster on. Put it back in the kitchen, went back to the bathroom while my crumpets cooked, only to turn around and see 6-inch high flames coming out of the top of the toaster. You get very nervous sitting in a hotel room at 3:15 a.m., hoping that the smoke alarms also don't get triggered. As a side note, eating untoasted crumpets is very, very hard. I planned to eat six, but was gagging on the fifth, so decided that was enough.
Oh mate, that's yeah. Marathons, the taper weeks, nerve-wracking, the sleep in the night before, then you wake up and you just oh, to go through that, you don't want to get the heart rate up too early. And yeah, mate, Carl's gee, he would have
He's
just so worried that
managed.
you're gonna wait the whole hotel, and you'd imagine there's a number of athletes that are preparing and probably trying to get extra sleep in there, and yeah, big Carlos might have of course mayhem.
Carl's tried to do the right thing, separate rooms for the wife and the kids just to make sure they get a bit of extra sleep. And then all of a sudden, wow, the toaster is just absolutely, oh, he's worried about burning the room down, poor bugger. But just us distance runners are a resilient bunch. He's put that behind him and he's chewed his way through his raw crumpets. And mate, he did comment that it's the strongest he's ever felt on the marathon. So if
Yeah.
anyone's brave, it may have
Could be a
been the
tactic.
raw crumpets, that just something that took about 7 hours to digest through his digestive system, because it would have been just like rubber trying to eat them, let alone chew
Yeah,
them.
I don't know if I could eat one raw crumb. Yeah.
No, I don't think I could. And when you're nervous and you're trying to eat, and just that motion of chewing, like, it almost makes you feel a bit nauseous as it is, let alone
Yeah.
like,
I
and
can
I.
distinctly remember, yeah, pre-marathon struggling to get breakfast, and also because you had the carb load and you're already full and you're like, oh, I just got to stop eating, but you need to get it in. And yeah, throwing nerves as well, and probably throwing a freaking fire in the background.
The toaster's got flames leaping out of it. The kids are in the other room, and you're not sure whether you're like, hang on, or who's going to be more grumpy at me, the wife and the kids, if I wake them up at 3:15 a.m. or if we all have to evacuate the building.
We
No.
appreciate Carl sending that in and letting us share it, because it is a bit of a light-hearted story to what is a stressful morning before a marathon.
And it all worked out okay. So
Yeah.
it landed well.
Yeah. Good stuff, mate. Hey, we got our guest, our big name guest who's about to join. So we'll let him in.
I can't wait. Bring him in.
Okay, our next guest is, as we mentioned at the top of the show, it's a big name. That's an Olympian, and back in May 20 earlier this year, actually, so May 2023, we received a sign up from Paul Cleary. The name rang a bell to Matt and Brady, and I obviously was like, yeah, I've heard that name, but is it the same one? And it's a name that I'd seen in race results as a kid in Runners World Mags and Australian Athlete. So, yeah, turned out was. And Paul was aiming for Sydney Marathon. He'd signed up to the Breaking 3 Hour program, was matched with Mattress Matty Davey, and he went on in September to run at the Sydney Marathon and ran 2:54. But also to unpack a bit about the race, we're also going to talk about Paul's elite career. He actually went on in 1996 to run at the Olympics in the 1500 meters. So, welcome to the show, Paul.
Excellent. Thanks for having me, Zaka.
Mate, we're excited to have you on. I know Chris was buzzing earlier today when it was finalized, and yeah, really, really excited to hear about some of the old stories.
Yeah, well, hopefully I don't bore you too much with some of the tales from the silent movie era, but some interesting times. I'll see you've got some grainy footage there from the from those days.
We do. We might have something up our sleeve to play back to you. But before we get there, I guess, and we have a number of our Run to BB athletes on here every week, and we always start with their running journey, and I guess taking it back to how you. you got into the sport of athletics and running and as a junior, and what got you hooked?
Yeah, it was probably I started off as everyone did. I was, you know, running around the playground and playing chasey, and I was always the last person to get tagged. So I think my parents took the hint and sent me down to the Laths. Funnily enough, my first event at the Laths was the 1500. So that was an interesting race. So I won the race. And I thinking the race had finished the bell lap, because I thought the bell lap, that signified end of the race. So I stopped over and field went past, and then they said, no, it's another lap. So I had to then go past the field again and go and try and win it again. So, that was my first race, Little Arts, and then did that for, probably 3-4 years. And then from there went on to meet up with Coach Tom Kelly, who bumped into me at a cross country meet in Wattle Park, just in one of the suburbs here in Melbourne. And Tom sort of took me under his wing and said, "Look, if you want to be a decent little distance runner, you got to join a club and you got to train." And so I joined up with his group and probably went from about a 4:20, 4:30 runner to a 4:05 runner that first year that I joined, and then progressively went from a 4:05 to a 3:55 the next year to a 3:45 the year after. So probably within 2 years of Tom, I was qualified to the World Junior Champs and went over there to Lisbon raced over there for I think I was just turned 18. So that was a pretty exciting sort of time for me to sort of go and see the world, and that's probably kicked my journey into athletics. So it was I was skipping over a bit of training and events in the lead up, but it was literally, I was just really enjoying my athletics, and the training was paying off. It was basically like I was going overseas with some of my best mates. So I was going over there with Michael Power, who ended up coming fifth at the World Junior Games in the same event, the 1500, and Paul Byrne is still one of my best friends. He ended up winning the 800 metres there. So, we're a tight-knit sort of crew that, just went over there and just really enjoyed ourselves and, had a good time. So it was pretty hard to see any work involved. It was just young kids having a great time.
So, Paul, with your training with Tom Kelly, was that Doncaster?
That was Doncaster, yeah.
Yep. So you're out there at, say, 15, 16, things are starting to get semi-serious as a group. How often are you training at that age?
If I was doing everything that Tom was saying, I'd be probably training 6 days a week, but I was a bit slack when I was probably 15, 16, so I was probably just doing track sessions on the Tuesday and Thursday. I'd race on the Saturday, so you do your interclub and whatnot, and maybe do an A grade on the Thursday night, and then a long run, sort of probably about 12k on the Sunday. So probably 3 to 4 days a week of training and maybe one day of racing.
And in that environment at Doncaster, because they had a very strong distance crew, and you had state league going at the moment, were you just around that high performance environment? In some of the influences and some of the athletes you were seeing day to day or week in, week out, like can you recall some of the inspirational athletes that you were looking up to?
So Doncaster had a good depth of middle distance runners. So we had Jason Rock, who was a really good 800 1500 runner, Dean Paulin, who was probably about a 334 335 runner. It was actually pretty hard to get into their A grade team, which is state league on Thursday night, so it was very hard to break into that crew. So if you got to call up on a Thursday night and get to hightail it into Olympic Park, it was a pretty big deal. So because quite often just to get into that team, you'd have to be running 3:45, something like that, to even just break into the Doncaster team. So we had a really strong team and depth in that. And then you also had the young guys that were coming up through there. So Mark Fountain, who was in 333 or 334, he was one of the guys there. Joseph Isher, who's one of my other training partners, who's a 145, 146 runner. So yeah, we had a good crew there, and we all just ended up having a really good time and good fun, and it didn't seem too much like hard work or training, because you're just a lot of times we're just telling jokes and entertaining ourselves. It didn't seem too serious, put it that way.
Yeah. Paul, as you sort of transition towards, I guess, sort of national representative level, especially in that juniors, did it ever move away from feeling fun? Like, did you ever feel any pressure as a kid to, I guess, like, hey, if I run top three here, I'm going to get selected to go to Australia? Or was it just always, well, what's today's adventure going to be?
Yeah, it was. It probably got to that point probably towards towards Atlanta, so qualifying for Atlanta. So that's probably where it became a lot more serious and a lot more sort of focused on that sort of outcome. Juniors was probably not so much. Juniors was just, we're just having fun, and that was just it was almost just a bit of a side, not a side hobby, but just a fun thing that we just, all did, and had a good time. We're just traveling around Australia or around the world and enjoying ourselves. There was probably a trip where I went overseas in 95. It was like a junior team. So if you're in between a sort of a junior squad and a senior squad, but you weren't quite, too old for juniors, or you weren't good enough for seniors, they had a team called Espoirs. And Espoirs was that sort of hybrid mix between both. So I went over there to Europe in, probably about May, for about a month or so of racing. And at that point, I was probably carrying a little bit too much weight over there, and was really battling. And I was trying to run some decent 800s over there, but just it wasn't coming together. So that was pretty disheartening there. And then knowing the Atlanta Olympics were the next year, which weren't probably on my horizon there at that stage, but knowing that they were coming, it was a bit more pressure. So we actually had a funny a camp in the AIS with Dick Telford, and I had my skin folds done, and I think my skin folds are north of 90, so I put it that way. So it wasn't a, and if anyone knows what skin folds are, they should be sitting probably around about 40, thereabouts. So
too much time at the buffet at AAS.
Oh yeah, and I was well truly in before the buffet, don't worry about that. We got on the treadmill and did a couple of tests on there, so lactate tests and whatnot, and I did quite well in the lactate and the VO2, and Dick Telford came up to me frothing the mouth that at the AIS lunch table, and just said, "Mate, if you drop some kilos, your VO2 max is going to go through the roof, and your lactates are amazing. You can tolerate the lactic, so it's a really good combination. But you just got to shed some fat, mate." And so read the right act from Dick, and I lost about 10 kilos after that. Came back, and sure enough, Dr. Dick was right. I ended up running. I think I improved from 3:45 to 3:38 in about 3 or 4 months. So that was good advice from Dick on that one.
Did it all seem a bit surreal, like how quickly you improved once the weight started to shed, or did you just sort of just took it in your stride? And
It did surprise me a lot. At one point, it sort of on one hand, it sort of was interesting just to see, how people would come up to me and say, "Oh, now you seem like you're serious." So that sort of surprised me. But the time sort of weren't that, I was just sort of doing incremental. So I was just doing little incremental gains. It was a big gain over a short period. So it wasn't like I went from 3:45 to 3:43 to 3:41 to 3:40. 3:39 to 3:38. So it was sort of incrementally getting faster, but I was still taking sort of large chunks over a short period of time. So that was probably, the surprising thing. And racing at that period in time in Australia, we had some really, really good competition domestically. So we'd have Kim McDonald, who was the UK sort of guy that would bring out all Kenyans. So he'd be bringing out a plane full of Kenyans, and you'd get the best in the world. He'd bring out, you know, the top two guys in the world, and you'd be racing against them in your domestic season. So it was pretty amazing sort of situation that we happened to be around in that period of time.
We're gonna touch on a bit of that epic domestic series, the GPs. I remember going to Olympic Park back in the day and just being in awe of some of the athletes, including yourself, going around. That just winding it back to the making that first Australian team as a junior top. You ended up getting top eight at the world under 20 world champs.
Yeah.
1994. Mike Powell was in that one. You finished sixth. You finished eighth and 3:44. Is that right? Or am I looking at
that? And sixth, I think.
Sixth, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. But I hope so.
Someone. Oh, actually, yeah. They've given you on the World Athletics profile just this top eight. It doesn't, say where you would finish. But yeah, sixth. That first trip, like, you know, being exposed to that level of competition, the seriousness of it, how was it?
Oh, I was like a kid in a candy shop over there. It was, first trip to overseas, and you had to go there with all your mates and about, 50 other 18 and 19-year-olds. It's pretty amazing experience, and loving it. We're just running at the 3A's, which is the British champs, so which is the equivalent of Australian champs. So we did those over there and in England, and touring around. I think the first place we stayed up was Belgium, and the World Cup happened to be on at the same time, so the soccer. So we were like going spastic. We just arrived from Australian winter and ending up in Belgium in the middle of summer, and it was getting dark at about 12:30 at night. We were just in awe of the place. We were absolutely loving it. So we're living our lives over there, and had a really good time over there. And just in that competition, it was just that World Juniors competition is that when I went there, and it was my experience. It was top level competition, and the guys you run against were they were still some of the best athletes. They went on to doing some amazing things. One of my mates shot me a note today. It said the guy that came third or fourth in our race, Riz Estevez, he ran 28. He's a 46-year-old. 28 minutes on road just for a 10K yesterday. So he said he's going a little quicker than you, mate. So
it's actually quite bizarre you say this, because that came into a group chat I'm in. And you may know Alpha Ayla.
Yes.
So Al's in this chat, and Ray's this Spaniard came up, and I was looking through, doing some research today, and his name came up. Yeah. I was like, hey, I'm chatting to a guy who was in the same race as him. And then eventually I was chatting to you, and he sent him on down a rabbit hole, and he started sending through all this info about you. And
hopefully all true stories.
I think he had question marks over the Spanish, to be honest, but all allegedly.
I'm not sure too. It's they had a bit of a checkered past, but you can never be too sure the Spaniards.
Right. And then moving to the senior ranks, and I guess we didn't at the top of the interview probably didn't come out and say your actual PBs, but 800, 147.06 in 1999, and 1500, 336.20 in Brisbane, 1999. So 1999 was a big year for you.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I probably had two careers almost. So, which we'll probably just touch on. So 1996, I got selected for Atlanta when we were over there. But unfortunately, when I got selected, I was in a bad way sort of physically. So I was probably, I didn't know it at the time, but I contracted post-viral fatigue syndrome, which is similar to the chronic fatigue over there. So I actually had basically got selected at a point where I was in a, running basically like crap, and got selected, and I was probably, when I got selected, I was like, it was a bit anticlimactic for that particular event. So, and I did go through a period for there for probably about 2 years after that, where I just didn't, it was very, very hard for me to train after that. So at that sort of level. So it did take me about probably 18 months after that. I changed coaches. I ended up moving to Peter Fortune after that. And then sort of started to build up, and I basically had to start walking as a start point. Walk for 10 minutes a day, 15 minutes a day, then up to 15, sort of 20 minutes a day, and then gradually built up to a slow jog from there, and then gradually built up to, it took me probably about over a year to build up to jogging, and then back to doing sort of inter-club sort of level stuff, and then 98 I started to start racing from there. So it was a slow sort of progression. That's why I probably had a very limited sort of period of times, you know. I didn't race at all from during 96-97 season, 97-98, and then I only started in the 98-99 season coming back. So yeah, so I had a bit of a layoff there, and then obviously under Fort I started running a lot better. I changed my training a lot, just to work in with, so I didn't have any relapses. And then, came back and ended up running PBs under Fort, and took another couple of seconds off my 1500 time, and probably another half a second off my 15, up my 800 time at that point.
Fort's still down at the corner of the kind of Anderson Street Hill every morning. Oh, not every. Every Tuesday night, and he's got his charges going around. And for those who don't know, Peter Fortune coach Kathy Freeman.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. She's so, in the squad.
You would have shared the track a few times.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, no, Kathy was great. So I did a few sessions with her when and she was a really hard trainer. So as well, so in the gym and on the track. So she would she'd really have a go. So she wasn't afraid to give you a little shove as well on the track. So one line of thing, she's testament to her ability and her tenacity there. She's amazing to watch and to train with. So, and she could just sort of, she was one of those athletes who could just turn it on. So it was almost like a choice, as opposed to whether you have talent. She just chose to use it when she wanted to, and turned it on and went into race mode when she needed to.
You mentioned,
You go, Chris.
And so you mentioned sort of almost like having two careers, that sort of 1996 almost breakthrough year, and then the body sort of broke down a little bit before rebuilding it in 99. But I'm really interested in what was a normal training week? What did that look like in 96 compared to 99? What sort of changes did you put in place to try and prevent that burnout second time round?
Yeah, good question. I suppose when I was in 96, I was, 19 years old, 20 years old. So then I was pretty much, I'd just throw whatever at myself and do track sessions and just try and, I guess, yeah, just try and smash it up every time and try and I don't know, you didn't really have any regard for recovery. So whereas 99 was very much a, work on the recovery, train smarter, and try and allow your body to do some sort of rehab in between those big track sessions, or in between those big endurance or threshold-ish sort of sessions that you do. So it was sort of probably more giving yourself some time to recover and approach it a bit more pragmatically in 99 than I did in 96, where it was just throw the kitchen sink at it and have a crack, and you're young and stupid, you do that sort of thing. But I think it taught me that wasn't the greatest way for me. So a lot of people still train like that, but it just didn't work for me, because I'd just break down, or I'd go into, it's a bit of a hole for a while in terms of training and illness. So it just didn't work for me doing it that way. So I think if I learned anything, it was to train a little bit, take some time and allow the body to recover a little bit better.
Hey, we're going to get to the Olympics, but before that, I guess the internet, like now we've got results coming out of our ears and there's a social media clips and all the rest of it, but it was actually hard to get, you know, a lot of articles on your results, and we got a few sort of things on World Athletics. But one thing that both Chris and I stumbled across today, and we both watched it and we got pretty excited. We're going to play, and I'm sure you know what's coming, but something that was in, I reckon, 96. Yeah, it was 96. And yeah, something that gets, I got the hair standing on the back of both our necks when we listen to this. So we're going to play the last minute of this this race, and we'll chuck it in the audio now.
It's 2:42 in this, the John Landy 1500. Melikon will probably step off very shortly. He leads Kiptanui. It's about 3:40 pace, so not super quick, that's for sure. Now Kiptanui to really rev it up. They'll come home hard. Cleary's going to try and hang on now. Scammell, Kibet, Tanui, Maru, a lot struggling. Kiptanui away. Cleary's responding very well at 2:50. Then Maru and Scammell. Look at Cleary. Challenging. Not only challenging away from Kiptanui. And listen to the crowd get behind the youngster. Go, Paul Cleary. Go, Paul. Go, Pat. Come on. 3:38, the qualifier for Cleary. Hang on. Kiptanui, they're coming in. The 19-year-old Australian's holding him. Kiptanui won't get him. Cleary's going to hang on. A famous victory. Kibet behind him. It's Cleary hanging on. And does he get the time? It doesn't matter. He gets the scalps of Kibet and Kiptanui.
Well, that's one of the greatest races at Olympic Park. And then, look, we've got a bit excited as well.
So, yeah. we'll include that in the show notes and put a bit of a clip on our socials, because it was just the 1996 NEC Classic Men's 1500 packed Olympic Park, and you had about five or six Kenyans out there. You had some big name Australians. You were 19, and yeah, lap to go, you just pulled off from what the commentators are saying, it's one of the best 1500 victories that's seen in Olympic Park or in Melbourne. And Moses Kiptanui, who, like, yeah, he's absolute gun, obviously was a, you know, back, what is he, three-time world championship medalist, got the silver at Atlanta. So what a scalp. how does it feel to hear, like, what's it like to hear that back?
It's a long time ago, but it is pretty funny to hear that and see. I blame David Colbert for that footage, because I think he's the one that uploaded it to YouTube. So one of the commentators in that thing, but it is pretty funny to see that and hear that sort of footage. And you're right, it's probably at that time where you have no regard. Like, I had my family or my mates there in the crowd. It was just a good vibe on the night. I didn't expect it to go that well. And I only sort of found out just before that meet that Kiptanui was going to run, because I always assumed he was going to run the 5K, not the 1500. It was a bit of a surprise for me. I'd come away with a few scalps there, as Bruce alluded. It was even better. So I loved Olympic Park. It was one of my favourite tracks to run at. Rest in peace. But do that on your home track in front of that crowd. And
Dick Telford was commentating as well.
Sorry.
It said Dick Telford was in the commentary box.
He was. So he was, his man was Pat Scammell. So you can hear him cheering on Pat Scammell at the, he was in the commentary box there as well. And it was a funny time. But I actually caught up with Kiptanui after it and said, congratulations. He was absolutely livid. He was not a fan at all at the end, so he was pretty peeved, was really broken. And I heard after the fact that he wasn't planning on doing the 5K. After that, he said bugger him running the 5K and the smash. He basically took it out on the rest.
I can blame you. Mate, but 300 to go and you've got like the home crowd just roaring and you're beating world champions. Like, could you just got across the line? You couldn't believe it. Like, I saw the lap of honour went for about 10 minutes. You were signing autographs. You had the Nike hat on. Did you already have some sponsorships in place? Like, was this a real game changer for you? And you were on the front pages, and you know, people were really taking notice.
Yeah, I had just landed Nike, so Nike had just sponsored me in Oakley as well. Hence the retro.
They're in fashion now.
I still get crap about these days. The sponsors were there, but it was sort of just it was just good fun. I still get shit also from Bernie, who on my way to, he said, you know, you think you're Bon Jovi running around doing a clap in the crowd. So it was kind of good to be brought down to earth pretty quickly with a thud after that race, but sort of one of those, you know, right place, right time sort of races. And I assumed the whole field was going to come past me down the front straight. So I couldn't see really what was happening behind me, but I was just assuming that everyone was going to come rolling past and that big Kenyan train would just roll over to me. But fortunately for me, it never came.
So you got a sense of belief that these guys were beatable after that? I mean, you beat them, but like, did you then go to, Atlanta, obviously you might have had some health issues, but from there on, was it like, I can mix it with them?
Yeah, I think even from 94, I thought they were beatable. So, we had world juniors, Kenyans were beatable. We were beating them in heats and races and even the world juniors. So it wasn't a lot of people put them on pedestals and said, you know, they're all... they're amazing, they're gifted, and they've got a certain talent and that no one else has. But what are some of them is, you know, they're just like you and I, they're just humans, they're just, they're beatable, they bleed. So, if you're good enough on the day, you'll beat them. And it's very hard to beat them if there's five or six of them in a row, because they do team up on you. So if you're the only Mzungu or white man in the race, they can really take it down on you. But if you're in the right race and that's probably a sign that you get their respect if they're taking you on and trying to team up on you. That's a good sign. So my view is they're all beatable in the right circumstances. So my philosophy was, you know, if I could try and kick over my strength was trying to, there's a bit of a kick towards it in the last 200. So if I could hold them or be in the mix at that 200 or at the top of the straight, I was always a chance. One guy I could never get was a guy called Paul Beetock. Mm. He was just a freak. He had this freakish kick. He was a 5K runner. I could never work out. I could never get past him. But he was amazing. Like, he had a real good turn of speed and would just absolutely cane down the front straight and put distance on you. When he's a 5K runner, but he I think he ended up medaling at Atlanta, maybe get a silver or a bronze. He was a freak, but out in the 5K, so really good.
And he had Justin Rinaldi on the pace as well. He might have
Rocket. Yeah. Rinaldi, he's still
with people. And,
Rinaldi's still one of my good friends, one of my old housemates. So I still catch up with him regularly. He's in our chat group. So, he actually just had a baby.
I'm in Princess Park on the weekend. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's going well. So yeah, I really enjoyed getting watching Pete and Joe running and watching those guys compete and mix it up. And they're just amazing to watch, and their techniques are just next. They're so smooth and. Just to watch them train and perform at the top levels, pretty good. And to be, have Rocket there letting us know how they're going, and obviously we don't pry too much, but it's always good to hear how they're going and what they're up to, and some of the sessions they do are phenomenal. So, really interesting.
Do you ever get the itch to go and pull the spikes back on and go and rip around another 1500 and just sort of, you know, even just get a set of dragonflies on and see what some of this new tech's about?
Yeah, I know. I was actually talking about this with one of my mates down here, and we're talking about doing one of the Miles Club races. He did one recently and did, I think he did 3:45 or something like that for, 4:45 for the name. But yeah, be keen to, I'd maybe be keen in the new year to pull on maybe the vapors, not the, but I'll probably tear my calf off the bone, but I wouldn't mind, maybe having a double in the 15 and just, if I get within a minute of my PB, I'd be bloody ecstatic. So, I think it'd be good fun to get out the track. I really enjoy running track. That's where, you know, the pedigree was, and going down to the track and, you know, doing some cuts and laps here and there is, really good fun. So it must be just the smell of Mondo that keeps you going.
Do you still follow the track scene sort of both locally and internationally quite closely, or is it sort of something that you just sort of stop by from time to time to reminisce?
No, I do. I've been watching a few of the Aussie guys. So I enjoy watching, obviously, Pete and Joe. Get pretty close on what they're doing. My son is obsessed with Jack Rayner. So he thinks he's it in a bit. So he loves watching him. So I follow him on Strava because I enjoy the fact that he actually puts pretty much everything on Strava. And he puts it on there, and it's amazing to see some of the outputs that these guys are doing. So I enjoy watching him and Stewie. Really enjoy watching Stewie and his racing. He's just front running. He's pretty good to watch and amazing. And even, you know, Ollie Hoare and the other guys. So yeah, it's good to watch those guys. And I guess from the internationals, you know, as arrogant as he is and as good as he is, Ingebrigtsen's, hard not to watch. It's hard to avoid watching, but he's pretty good to watch, and just his arrogance, confidence, whatever it is, he's next level. So there must be some good fresh air out there in the Norwegian fields there, because they all seem to be doing pretty well at the moment. So,
how do you find just seeing the way athletes are now, and like compared to the support you had, like were you working full time? How did you go about mixing that athlete lifestyle with earning money, and how challenging was it? And what are your sort of thoughts on it now, as what athletes can, how do they survive and how do they grow?
I can't really comment on how they do it now, because obviously there's a lot of social media presence out there at the moment, which also has its negatives. But at that stage, I think to mine, it was probably costing me about $20,000 or $30,000 a year just to race and to train and to travel. I was a loss leader, I guess you could say. costing me an arm and a leg to compete. So it got to the point for me where it was sort of just, I actually had that Peter Pan moment where I said, look, I've got to grow up and get a job now. So that was probably the case for me, where I sort of got a half finished finance economics degree, and I was working part-time at ANZ at that stage. So I was sort of at the point where I've got actually, I think it was probably 24, 25 at the time, and I sort of got to the point where I was just wasn't working for me, the running, and I wasn't enjoying it. So I just thought, it's just time for me to hang up the spikes and go back to uni, finish that off, and then get a real job and do that, unfortunately. So that's probably where I laid. And at that stage in, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, there wasn't much in the way of incentives. You might get, you'd actually earn more on the dole than you would as a professional athlete, so it was really hard to make a living at that point. So yeah, you might get a couple of thousand every couple of months. You might do some races, you might have to supplement some pro races, things like that, but yeah, endorsements weren't really thick and fast at all. So yeah, it was a tough graph, I think, at that point. And I'm not sure how it compares to these days, but I don't see I don't see too many that listen to long distance runners cruising around in
not Lambos, no.
Their share portfolio. So I don't imagine much has changed, and it's a sad sort of reality that you'd be top 10, top 15 in the world, and you're earning less than the 500th or 600th best footballer in the country.
In the Eastern Seaboard.
Exactly. So, Southern State Sport. So, that's pretty. I think that's a sad sort of reality that unfortunately still exists. But I'd love to see that change. And I think they're if they can get some extra gains, I'd love to see that, because the output and training that these guys do, they deserve it.
And Paul, conscious of time, but I do want to touch on the Olympics. I know you mentioned that, it was sort of had some health issues leading in to that. But Atlanta, huge. It must have been just, I guess, from someone running around Doncaster to then find out that you'd got selected. I think that race at Melbourne helped, and then obviously there was some other qualifying races to get you there. But tell us about that feeling, what it's like, the atmosphere, getting into the village, call room, the nerves, and, because Chris and I, we're that far removed from what the feeling would be like to go to the Olympics.
It's a bit surreal, to be honest. You're sort of sitting there in the village, and you're a sports nut like I am. You're just seeing all these famous faces, so basketball stars, tennis stars, your idols that you had, Morselli. I had posters of Morselli in my wall, sitting in a bus next to him the next day. I was sharing a ride next to El Baruj. So guys like that. So it's a bit of a pinch me moment there, just to have that. And one which is bizarre, not even related to athletics, but I was in the buffet line, so getting some food just at the village restaurant, and we're sitting there, and I don't know if you know, there's little tiny little dinner rolls that I have, the white little sort of rolls, and a fellow next to me leant over, and he had this hand that was the size of a saucepan, these little dinner rolls are like this big, but he grabbed it like it was tiny. And I looked at him and went, this guy is massive. And then I turned to my right and then looked up and kept on looking up. And it was Dolph Lundgren, who played Ivan Drago. I let a few expletives go and went, oh, that's bloody Dolph Lundgren. I said, that's Ivan Drago. Oh, my effing God here. And so I lost it. And my mate, learning was next to me, he goes, what the? God, Rocky, it's Ivan. What the hell? And so we lost it. So that was one of those moments where you just didn't know where you were, and you were sort of just kid in a candy shop. I was watched Rocky 2 or Rocky 3, whatever it was. Only 5 years earlier, so I was cheering on Rocky to beat the Russian nemesis. Be there as a karate coach for the US team, so as a taekwondo coach, so surreal. So that was had things like Arnold Schwarzenegger coming through the village doing promotions for his latest movie release. So he's just cruising around the village, and you're bumping into Arnie. So it's all a bit weird, but a lot of pinch me moments where can't quite get used to it, but the whole cool room thing was pretty crazy, because I think you had to end up getting to the track about 3 hours before your race, and then had the first cool room, which is 2 hours before, and then the last cool room, which is 1 hour before. So you had to really sort of plan ahead. So if you had an early race, for one of the morning sessions, you had to really be up at 4 or 5 a.m. to get the bus to get to the track, which is a bus. But the traffic there was insane, and you wouldn't know if there was going to be a presidential motorcade going through at the same time. So you had to allow an extra hour, and roads would be shut down for no reason. And it was out of control. But it's just a bizarre sort of experience the Olympics, and you know, obviously the Centennial Park bomb going off, and you know, conference to the village every day. It was bizarre. So
how old were you at the time? 20 odd.
Yeah, so 20. So we're also underage. So after we finished, I won't either. So not that I felt like going out after it because.
Sure,
we would like to in the end, but no, we couldn't go out because we were under the age of 21, so
yeah,
we ended up having to smuggle some beers in through the fence, and I had to get someone to buy beers for me. So one of the Argentinian coaches, wrestling coaches, buy some beers for me and stuck those in. Had about 1.5 beers, and I was, you know, I was buzzing, so
What was the support network like back then for someone who's 20, the Olympics, surrounded by these superstars and, you know, high-pressure environment? Like, you just – how do you cope with that? Are you just – does he feel isolated?
Well, there was me and Bernie and I, so he was the same age, so both of us were sort of, both 20. But, yeah, you sort of – more or less, back in the 90s, you're left to your own devices. There wasn't much supervision. You sort of have a team, and you're just doing, you know, whatever you like, really. In terms of support, we had psychologists and, team medics and physios, masseurs. So that was sort of pretty well there as support if you needed it. But, you basically just sort it out if and when you needed it. It was a sort of enforced. There wasn't really any other team building activities other than sort of just going to the track and watching some of the athletics and watching your teammates go there and going to some of the other sports and whatnot. But it was a great environment and great great experience. I just wish I had had more of them. It would have been nice than just the one. So which I thought I'd, you know, obviously always thought I'd do, you know, Sydney and then maybe finish off at Athens, but unfortunately, Atlanta was one and only.
As you've had a bit of a chat about some of the highs and the lows that you've experienced through running, but what were some of the challenges that you faced transitioning out of that sort of running lifestyle back into, I guess, civilian life in terms of, you know, finding, like, settling into that full-time job and letting go of running?
Yeah, good question. It was pretty hard, actually. I found it because it was athletics and track was very all-consuming. So it was virtually you just had all this spare time on your hands, even though you were working full-time at that stage and part-time and then going to uni. You did have a lot of free time on your hands and it was a tricky transition. And then I think when I finally hung up the Spikes ended up playing football as well. So I played footy for St. Kevin's and played a few games there. Kept on tearing my calf, so I was good to the team. But had a good time there playing a bit of footy. Then tried to do a little bit more, you know, jogging and whatnot. So I gave it about 4 or 5 years and then started doing, I did a couple of half marathons and a marathon. Did the Noosa Triathlon a couple of times as well. I sort of bombed in, I think, the first marathon I did. I did about 3:13, something like that. But strained my calf in that race and then tried it the next year. And then first K, strained my calf again. So we got through that and I did about 3:02. And then I didn't go near a marathon for 13 years after that until Sydney. So it was a bit of a, but I always had that vision of, you know, or that aim of doing that sub three. So it just came a little bit later than I expected. So I was probably more annoyed at myself that I didn't actually have a good dip at the at a marathon, probably when I was, I guess in my early to mid-20s, I probably could have run a pretty decent one.
Yeah, just by luck, you ended up, Matt and Gemma were living literally around the corner, and you might have seen those two belting around the streets of Rye. And you landed on the Run to PB website and had a signed up to have a crack at Sydney Marathon.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it was a really good coincidence there. I'd seen Matt run a I think he smashed a park run in, you know, low 16s. And I said, this, I thought to myself, this guy can actually, he's a decent runner. So
don't tell him that.
I stupidly DM'd him and said, let's jump in for a session. And then, quickly found out that, he's a lot faster than me. And he completely towed me. I think it was just, it might have been the day or so after Jim won the run for the kids or something like that. So I said, oh, how'd you go? And she goes, yeah, went okay. And yeah. All right, okay. All right. This is it. This is an elite company then. So but they're really, really great people and really nice to chat with and really good. And so I reached out to Matt and said, you know, I'd be keen for you to set me out a program and I'll jump on and sign up, do the sign up. And he seemed to really know, obviously knows marathon running back to front. And who better to get some advice from for like us, you know, run 220 and as Coach Gemma to 235.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. So
how did you find the marathon training, you know, going out the long runs? I know Matt might have mentioned that you rocked up a couple of long runs. In fact, you put them away at one point down the hill.
Oh, yeah. I think I got lucky. I found out later that Gemma is not a big downhiller. So I might have snuck a little win there. The training was actually, I had a look at it and on paper, some of the sessions looked really, really tough. But sort of as I got into it, they stretched me, but they didn't kill me, which was good. So I think Matt has a really good ability to sort of know, you know, where your limits are. And even though the sessions were long, there was enough recovery in between the sessions for me to sort of bounce back and be able to sustain the training that he set me. And that was a really enjoyable training and program and a lot of things that I would never have done in terms of the way he structures the sessions. So it was a real eye-opener. So I said to him a couple of times that I'm actually really enjoying these sessions because it's something I've never done and challenges you in other ways. So I'm doing a 36K run, but doing a 12K progression at the end of it is a little bit interesting, but it was a really good challenge and sort of, you know, you sort of half look forward to it, half dread it. But once you finish it, it's a really good sort of feeling. You sort of, you get that confidence that the marathon won't be so hard, that if you can sort of sustain that sort of effort and training, that the marathon should be not a walk in the park, but a very achievable outcome to do that sub three, and also just getting the nutrition was another one that I just never really considered. And he said, look, you might want to have a gel every half hour. And I said, mate, I'll be carrying Morton gels. I'll be sponsored by them. But it helped me a lot in the race, and probably in that last five to 7K when it really counts. That was where it really started to kick in for me, and I felt actually that was probably the best I felt during the whole race. So it was good.
Considering previously racing, your 4 minutes was probably the extent of your distance. You're now talking, you know, being out there for nearly 3 hours. So.
Yeah, just a lot slower. So I can't run that fast anymore. Sometimes we'll run longer and slower. It's a good fun event, and I enjoy the training that goes along with that, and doing things like, you know, trail races and. So definitely keen to jump in a few track races and just if I'm tearing my hamstring off the bone, not so great, but hopefully can hold out and enjoy some of those races and hopefully do a not too disappointing time.
Have you got some specific goals for yourself over the next sort of 12 to 18 months that you want to go and chase? Or
I'd love to do Boston Marathon, so that's probably one of the ones on the list I'd love to do. I'd be keen to do, after seeing Gemma and Billy and all the guys and Aaron do the Melbourne Marathon. I'd love to have a crack at that next year as well. So that would be really one. And your home marathon, that would be another good one to do. But definitely love to do an overseas marathon. Probably not New York, but yeah, definitely love to do Boston and continue to do these trail races and whatnot through Australia and whatnot. Good fun.
No, it's mate, it's been great to obviously take a trip down memory lane and to pick your brain and to hear some of these stories, because it's a decorated career, and then the comeback to the marathon, also really cool to hear. But really appreciate your time for jumping on. I think you've been more than generous to give us a good part of an hour to chat about your running. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on the show, Zach. Hopefully, and Chris, hopefully you get some good intel there, or some, hopefully I haven't bored too much of your listeners there as well. But really enjoyed the show, and forward to hearing all your podcasts.
No, thank you. I reckon me and Chris, so we're running nuffies. We probably could have asked Pepper Jewers another hour of questions about the old days. So
I think any others, just let me know.
Awesome, mate. Well, hopefully we'll, in the new year, catch up for a run and get down to God's country for one of those.
Absolutely, yeah. NTC, look out.
Yeah, that's it. Thanks, mate.
Cheers. Thanks, guys. See ya.
Thanks, Paul.
Mate, what a buzz that was.
Oh, that, I feel spoiled. Just sometimes I sit here as a fan and just listening as if I'm actually listening to the podcast and forget that I'm actually meant to be here asking questions. And that was another one of those times. That's a pinch myself moment. That was so cool.
And it was, I know when we kind of came across our desk that we could get a chance to chat to Paul, we probably were a bit bombarded with like, hey, where do we take this? Because you look at the results, you look at what this guy's done, and how do we kind of structure it? And I think, you know, there wasn't, like I sort of mentioned, it was sort of hard to get a lot of details as opposed to race results. And to do it justice, I know we could have gone for hours. Like, there was 10 races in there, 10 race results. I would have loved to have. I think would have gone too hard on those, but it was so cool to hear his insights in after, and particularly for us when we watched that clip today, and then we were both blown away, and then to hear him talk about it, so cool. And
I wanted to ask more questions about Dolph Lundgren. Literally have Ivan Drago and then Arnold Schwarzenegger walking around the Olympic Village like this.
Oh, mate. That's cool. It's, it is a bit of a pinch me moment. We've got some legends like that in our, in the Run to PB community.
And that's it. Like, is for everything that Paul's achieved in his running career, to think that, at 46, 47 years of age, he's still throwing the shoes on, and his big goal for 2023 was to go and run sub-3 in a marathon. And be a super active part of the Run to PB community. So it's awesome. It really is.
Last week's episode we had Jack on, Jack Davies. Had some great feedback from there. We had a couple of people message and got in contact with Jack. They're gonna chat to him about just managing their health issues. So really cool to see that as well.
It was really interesting because just learning about the technology that's now available, where you can wear a patch and essentially hook that to a widget through your Garmin and have in the moment live feedback. That is something that I was certainly not aware of. And talking to a few of my athletes that I coach, but also the Shepherd and Runners Club, and that they found that was just incredible. So just things like that. It's this sort of thing, just being able to share that with people. Jack was wonderful last week. So I can't speak highly enough of what he was able to share with us.
And we've got a couple more coaches in the pipeline. Also, next couple of weeks, I know Gemma's due to come back on to announce the latest athlete coaches award. So hotly contested. There was a number of results in October. Obviously, we had the Melbourne Marathon, but there were some other events that that went down. So that'll be a tight one to win.
Nominations were flying around recently, so looking forward to seeing who Jem picks out for that.
Yes, good times, mate. And oh, last bit before we clock off, and a bit of a, I guess, our, just to continue the theme of the Tasmanian War down there with Paul Reason. He wrote in, he just sent a message, screenshot, just of a screenshot of Matty Morgan, his rival down in Tassie, who uploaded a Strava walk. What are your thoughts on that, Christo?
It depends on the context of the walk. Like, if you're rehabbing from injury and that's sort of what you're building up to, then yeah, I'm all for it. But if it's to clock up an extra 1.2K so that you reach 70 for the week, I'm a bit dubious on that.
Questionable. I think Paul's hit back. He wasn't happy with some of the treatment he's received of late. So we thought he's pestering me. He sent me this about 3 or 4 times just to call out Matty. So the war continues down in Tassie.
Scott's being fired from north to south and south to north down there. I know there is. It does get fairly intense from the two ends of the state. So
head to head going down too. So we'll have news hopefully next week. There's some things developing.
Might need to get them both on at the same time. Not sure whether we're going to be able to release that content because it could get fairly spicy. But perhaps we give the gents the opportunity to settle their differences live on the podcast.
Yeah. Oh, mate. Well, next week we'll be back. We'll probably have some more news from Tassie. We'll have some... more running news. We'll have a new run to be a new guest. I've got some coaches jumping in, like I said. So looking forward to it, mate.
No, looking forward. That'll be episode 170. Can you believe it, mate? 170 episodes.
It's we're going to be getting close to that 200, mate. We're going to start planning for that.
Yeah, no. I'd say it's going to be hard anyway. How do we top this? Maybe this is a pinnacle. We've reached it at 169 with what Paul's been able to give us, which is, all seriousness, it has been absolutely brilliant. So, mate, I don't know how we top this or if we can, if that is possible, but look forward to next week.
Good try, mate. All right, you go water those plants.
I will.
Cheers, mate. I'll speak to you soon.
See ya.